Bremner Reel 5. Could you tell me whether the formal discipline of the Navy was fully maintained while you were at Imbros, or did things, on the other hand, relax at all?
Well, I think the point there is that we did maintain the formal discipline, but you must realize that in a ship, you're all living together, and the discipline is very strict and formal when there is need for discipline, but it's very much stripes off when there is no need for discipline. And then I think that is the great difference between the Navy and the Army, that the Navy is so much better at relaxing a strict discipline. And I think we did that at Imbros. Maybe we relaxed it more than you would in a ship, because it was more difficult. It was a ship in a way, because we couldn't get off it. We could go for walks, check round. There was no town near us. Panagia was the nearest town, but I never went there. But one's food was quite good enough. We could get any amount of a rather a rough, raw local wine, which was drinkable under those circumstances. I don't think you'd have drunk it at a formal dinner, but it was very good under the circumstances which we had there.
I've noticed in talking to some RSC pilots that life very much revolved in operational squadrons around the mess bar. Did this same situation apply in the Naval Air Service, or were their traditions different?
Well, we didn't have a bar there, of course. And we didn't have very much drink, as far as I remember. Mostly this raw wine. We didn't have. I can't remember spirits being there. I suppose they must have had them. But no, there was no. I can't remember any ordinary, what you might call the sort of pub crawling business in the bar.
Now, after Imbros, in the spring of 1916, you were transferred to Theso. Can you remember what sort of impression that new aerodrome had on you when you first arrived?
Well, it was a very much more isolated place than Imbros. It was a very difficult aerodrome to approach, because it was on a piece of land which rather jutted out into the sea. And on at least two sides of it, the land sides of it, were high hills. And you could only approach the aerodrome from the sea. You flew into the hill and made a sharp turn and landed if the wind was sea breeze. It was quite difficult, really. And I was told, as I had the only single-seater fighter, I was to land last, watch all the other machines land on the aerodrome, and then select the place that looked best, and then land mine. But I had to get it down safely, whatever happened. Well, the first two machines that came both crashed on landing. And I think the difficulty was that there was a queer line across the aerodrome. This was in the spring, and there was growth of grass or whatever it was on it. And whether it was the way the land had been ploughed or something like that, there was a line which you could see from the air across the aerodrome. And it rather looked as if there was a bank and there were two levels. The aerodrome was on two levels. And I think everyone was a bit scared of landing. After those two machines crashed, I waited and nobody else went down. So I thought, well, orders or no orders, I'm going. And I went down. I made a slow pass over the aerodrome. I couldn't see anything wrong. And just landed. And a special friend of mine who was flying a two-seater Nieuport was following me very closely indeed, because he wanted to see what I was doing. And he landed precisely behind me, and I thought he was going to run into me after I'd stopped, because he's a heavier machine, and ran further. But there really was nothing wrong with the aerodrome as such.
The problems were more psychological than real.
Problems were psychological, I think, and with this line which one couldn't interpret until you got down. When you got down, you could just see it was a different kind of grass. It was scorched a bit. It looked yellow, I think it was probably that.
What was the setup at Thaiso?
Well, we lived in tents. We had a tented mess. And well, there was a French flight there. They were very good. They were very nice people, very fine pilots. And they were very helpful to me because they flew Nieuports and they knew everything that was to be known about a Nieuport. It was they who showed me how to land one. They also, I had trouble with my engine, and they were beautiful mechanics. And they overhauled my engine and got it right. And they presented me with a real, genuine, German-made Bosch Magneto, which I transferred from machine to machine that I flew. Never had any more trouble with it.
Did you notice any outstanding differences of any kind whatsoever between the French Air Service and the British Air Service on the evidence of what you saw at Thaiso?
Well, it's awfully difficult to look at an isolated unit like that of amateur, shall we call them, and generalize about the French Air Service.
Why do you say amateurs?
Well, I mean, none of them were pucker service people. Their adjutant was a man called Preslin, who was one of the chief artists for La Vie Parisienne, and their chief pilot was a man called Constantini, who was a very famous racing motor driver. And who always used to call me le grand pilote du petit Bristol, and he always introduced himself by smacking his chest and saying, Constantini, pilote du Nieuport, très bon pilote, moi! And we used to get pathetic notes with really beautiful little drawings by Preslin, asking us to take pity on the poor starving Frenchmen and let them have a little bread. And I was armament officer, and they used to come and scrounge bombs from me. I think they were really worse on the end of the line than we were.
Well, without attaching too much significance or necessarily assuming that they were representative of the French Air Service as a whole, nonetheless, were there any distinct differences in style or practice?
I think they were more... That crowd certainly, I think, were less formal discipline than we had. And I always enjoyed them because Constantini was an absolutely first-class mechanic. And every time I landed, I always used to go and search out Constantini and say, what's wrong with my engine? He'd heard me take off and land, and he'd tell me. And they would overhaul my engine for me.
Was there good rapport then between French and British?
Yes, very good.
What kind of flying duties were you carrying out from Thaiso?
Well, Thaiso was on the eastern end of the main Allied line. On one side of the Greek peninsula there was Salonika, and on the other end of the line was at Stavros. And we were just some miles out to sea off Stavros in a way, and we were really supporting the end of the line. And the other thing which we did was to burn the Bulgarian crops. We made on the island, we made petrol bombs, or rather the ships, the monitors used to come in and their tinsmiths would supply us with bomb shaped containers which we filled with petrol. And then we armed them with an inertia plunger and a Verres cartridge. And when you dropped it, the tin burst and the petrol was flowed over the crops, and the Verres cartridge set a light to it.
Was this petrol bomb drop on Bulgaria an isolated raid, or did you carry out many drops?
we went quite frequently out and bombed as many of their fields as we could. We were really a potentially offensive unit at the extreme eastern flank of the main line. And I suppose that we should have been called in for action if there was any danger of the enemy turning our main flank. But nothing really happened there. I don't think we were very much use. What we may have had some strategic value. I think our use was much more potential in case something happened, which never did.
What was your impression of the kind of damage you were causing by these drops on the Bulgarian crops?
Well, I think we burnt a very large acreage of crop there. What? How much damage it did, I don't know. Because it was a very... there was a flat piece between close to the sea. And then came the mountains, and that was the perhaps the most difficult part of it, flying over the mountains, which were pretty high, some 10,000 feet, I think.
What kind of problems did that create?
Well, the problem, my problem, which I fortunately never had to solve, was I only had a single-engine machine. And when I was over these mountains, if the engine failed, I hadn't the slightest chance that I could see of making a safe landing. And the question was whether I just put my nose down and got it over quickly, or whether I came down as slowly as I could and prolonged the last 5 minutes of my life. Possibly, I suppose, making a reasonable landing. Or getting away, I don't know. I never had to solve it.
I suppose that this this work would be a comparatively new development in the field of bombing, this use of incendiaries.
Oh, yes, I suppose so. I think it was just a question of doing any damage one could see, one could do.
How well prepared were you for bombing operations?
Oh, not not prepared at all. We had our machines, I don't remember any machine coming out fitted with bomb racks. They used to send bomb racks out. I took on my small machine, I took 4 20-pound bombs, and I fitted a bomb rack just behind the engine, under the fuselage, just behind the engine. No bomb sights or anything like that. There was a hole in the floor of the fuselage. And I used to squint down through that when I could see a target, I'd let the bombs go. And sometimes I'd pull the machine up too much and the bombs bounced off my axle. But didn't seem to do any damage.
Apart from bombing, what other kind of flying duties did you indulge in from Thaisa?
We did a certain amount of spotting. And that was rather difficult because the target was very often behind a hill or range of hills, and the Navy aren't very good at that. You see, you don't have hills in the sea. You can see your target, and you nothing in the way. You just fire at it. But with us, sometimes you would report that the shell was a few yards short, and then the next shell was a few miles over. Because they just cleared the top of the hill, and then it was a long time before the shell came down. And they hadn't anything like a howitzer. All the naval guns are much too flat a trajectory for that sort of work. And the Admiral once said to our CO, how is it that I do so much better shooting when the French are spotted than when you are? And our CEO said, well, sir, the French are very polite.
Incidentally, I meant to ask you, what was the target that the monitors were firing at?
I can't remember. It was just small things. I was told to go and bomb something, some hut somewhere, and I found what I thought was right. Only the river, which I thought was the boundary between Greece and Bulgaria, did a curve, and a short piece of the eastern bank was in Greece. And I saw what I thought was my target there and bombed it. I don't think I hit it, but it found it was the Greek staff mess, which was rather a nuisance. No one let on that I'd done it.
Did you operate with any Serbian pilots?
Yes, but there was a Serbian pilot attached to the French flight. He was an absolute fanatic against the Bulgarians. He loathed them. And he used to borrow bombs from me. And he only had a bomb rack, I suppose, took four, or possibly had one each under each wing, probably took eight bombs. That wasn't enough for him. He cut out the passenger seat and used to stack the inside of his nacelle with bombs. This was a Morris Farman Shorthorn. And he would take up a walking stick with a crooked handle. And when he dropped the bombs off his wings, he would then take the walking stick and hook my bombs alongside him. He'd pick it up, because they're only small bombs, and he'd spin the safety fan off and then throw the bomb overboard. Why he didn't blow himself up, I don't know.